Hello, it's Larry Clark again with another episode of From the Composer. And today we're talking to composer Jason Nitsch. And Jason, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks a lot for having me. Excited to be here.
Well, we're excited to have some of your music as part of our catalog. And today we're talking about two of your pieces. And first of all, tell us specifically a little bit about what you do and how'd you get your start in writing music.
Sure, great. Well, I'm in public education. I've been a band director, all of my adult life and all of my career. All my degrees are in music education, but I've always been really interested in writing and in composing, going back to even when I was in high school. So I sort of got my start back then, doing some arranging, doing some small things for my group that I was a part of. And then when I got to college, the same thing. I sort of did as much arranging as I could, and that sort of gave me a pathway into composing, and more I started to write, con my friends into letting me write things for their senior recitals and things like that. And, and from there, it just sort of developed into bigger and better things. And, it's a really important, key part of kind of who I am as a musician, as an educator. So, I enjoy all of the experiences that I get to have through my composing work, in addition to my work as an educator.
So you mentioned that you compose for student recitals and things like that. So obviously you've written for other things besides concert band. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, when you're 20 years old, it's much easier to get your buddy who's a trumpet player to play a piece than it is to get a band together sometimes.
It certainly is. Yep.
So yeah, but I really like writing chamber music and writing solo and small ensemble music, and it's something that as I got into teaching, I started to write more and more band music. But as I've gotten a little bit older, I've kind of reverted back a little bit, and I do a little bit more chamber work now. I've gotten into electroacoustic composing and composing with electronic tracks and pre-recorded tracks and things like that. And so some of that, for some of the complexity of things that I tend to work with, those become a little bit more manageable in those kinds of settings, in a chamber music setting. So I try to divvy it up pretty carefully. I try to split my time pretty evenly between the larger ensemble works and smaller groups.
You mentioned a little bit about using electronic tracks and things like that with your music. And obviously that a good segue into your piece Self-Destruct. And the big thing about this podcast is we want this to also be geared towards what's going to help the students and the director perform your music better. So any insights you can give us into that piece and how the track works or whatever, will help stimulate the students as part of the process of learning and performing the piece.
Sure. Well, that piece is a great example of a larger ensemble work that has some electronic elements, some sample elements in it. And, one of the things that I find as a composer, and I mentioned this a little bit, is, because of some of the technical, responsibilities and some of the complexity of getting some of these electroacoustic works set up, I find that solo performers or small ensemble performers are much more willing to take that on. And so with Self-Destruct, I was looking for a way to start to incorporate some of those elements into a concert band piece, something that a large ensemble could play, something that maybe a younger group or a less experienced, more developing group could play, but that could still have some of those electronic elements. Would not be, really technically demanding, wouldn't take a lot of technical expertise to initiate and to do. So so Self-Destruct doesn't have an electronic track that you play with, but it has several sound drops that occur at specific parts of the piece, which also sort of help to tell the story of kind of how the piece is progressing a little bit. Gives the audience a little bit of an insight onto how the music is reflecting the story. And I think, in a couple of cases provides a little comic relief.
Right.
One of the things that I think is really useful is when I'm able to use narration. And that's one of the things that that is in the sound drops for Self-Destruct is there's several narrators in addition to some sound effects. And so I think it's just, one more way that we can bring another element of media into concert performance And hopefully, you know, that'll be a way that more conductors will then become interested in other work that's out there that has electronic or electroacoustic properties. Students as well, maybe they'll become more curious about other things that are out there. So, you know, hopefully it's more of an introduction to all the great literature that's out there, and hopefully will cause more people to consider those kinds of pieces when they're programming in the future.
Obviously, directors are always looking for something that's going to engage the students, that's going to be interesting and different, and I think this piece certainly fits into that. So tell us a little bit about how you see the sound drops being initiated in a performance. What do you think the best way to do that is?
You know, there's a couple of different options. In previous projects, you know, sometimes a conductor will have the sound drops on their iPhone or on an iPad or on a laptop that's right there with them at the podium, and they'll just reach over and trigger it at the right time. Sometimes it's a colleague who may be there in the front or backstage with the percussion. Sometimes you may have an extra body back in the percussion section. There's a lot of different ways to do it. You can load the samples into, you know, like a Roland sampler, or you could load them onto something like a Yamaha DTX, and you could trigger them that way. So there are really a lot of options in how you can initiate it during the performance, which I think is great because, you know, depending on what your own situation is, it gives you some versatility in how you deal with it in your own situation.
Yes, that's good advice, because what's important, I think, for people to understand is it can be as simple as your phone, or as more complex if you choose to go that route.
Absolutely.
So how about some suggestions to the conductors and performers on specifics about the actual music in the piece that would help them as they prepare the music for a performance?
Well, you know, I think anytime you're working in a piece like this, you know, there's a lot of driving rhythm, a lot of repeated rhythm. I think you're always going to want to spend time working in isolation on articulation and exactly how you want to deal with the space between all of those notes, talking about the end of notes and how you're going to release those. And I think there are several, really acceptable ways that you can do that, just depending on, you know, a conductor's preference. But I think when you have a piece like this, I think that's something that's always important. Also making sure that all the percussion elements are really carefully balanced, so that they're moving the pulse of the piece along, but they're not overpowering the melodic elements in the front. And then I think just especially in the middle section, and if you know the piece, you'll know what I'm talking about. You know, there's kind of a middle section where there's a sound drop that kind of continues over some of the playing. And I think, working through that segment with that particular sound drop so that you hit all the checkpoints in terms of getting the musical elements in the right place with the narration and with the couple of little effects that go on there. I think that's something that's real important, to make sure that particular section of the piece really pops for the audience.
So a piece like this, obviously, there's a lot of energy and excitement to it, but how do you see a conductor programming this piece?
You know, this would be a good opening piece. This would be a good closing piece. You know, I think it would be a good, maybe good end of the year, maybe a good special concert. You know, not necessarily something that you would want to take to a festival or to maybe your state evaluation performances. But for some of the other performances, maybe to close out the year, maybe on a spring trip, I think a piece like this is something that can keep the students really excited and interested, because it is something that's kind of different and because it is kind of fun once you start introducing the electronic elements and some of those things.
Well, I think that I share the excitement that everybody here at Excelsior Music has for the piece when we heard it the first time, that it's different, fresh, and I just think students are going to love it.
Well, I hope so too. I hope everybody really enjoys it, and I can't wait until it's out there in the world, and we get to hear it all over the place. I'm really excited for that.
Yeah, that'll be great. Well, in terms of just sort of generally your style of composition and how you like to interpret your own pieces, since that's what they're trying to do, maybe give us a little insight into, you know, what you think in terms of like how you approach or how you want people to approach your pieces from like articulation style, phrasing, that sort of thing.
Sure. Well, I'm a percussionist. I grew up a percussionist when I was in school, back when I was still performing. And so, you know, I always think that my music has always exhibited a lot of rhythmic activity and a lot of unique, you know, rhythmic combinations. But I think because I'm a percussionist, I think I also tend to focus, and this is the same thing, you know, in my work in education as a conductor myself, I think I always tend to think much more about the fronts of notes and how we're going to attack the fronts of notes and how we're going to place weight on those notes. And as a result, you know, also, you know, how that weight transfers from strong beats to weak beats. So, you know, I think that when I look at a piece like Armada, I might base my articulation choices in the way that I'm choosing to weight some of these rhythmic moments. I might base some of those on, you know, what my percussionist might be doing. It might be situations where, you know, I might have my percussionist play a little bit and then, you know, well, you know, clarinets, you want to emulate the snare drum sound because, you know, that's the kind of attack sound that we're looking for. That's the kind of style that we're looking for. And I think that that's true of, you know, several of my pieces, that they tend to be very percussive and rhythmically active.
So, what about like accents? How would you approach accents in your music?
Yeah, for me, an accent is less about volume and it's more about weight. I tend to think of an accent more as a point of emphasis. And so when I'm teaching anything, not just my own music, but when I'm teaching any repertoire, I talk to my ensemble a lot about making an accent in the music a beat of emphasis, giving it just a little bit more, giving it a little bit more weight than all the notes around it, more than talking about volume. Because I think sometimes when you talk about volume in accents, I think sometimes you end up changing the note length and you end up changing and altering the style. I think if you think more in terms of musical weight, I think that you get a little bit more genuine response out of an ensemble.
Yeah, that's I always go back to the old Arnold Jacobs comment, length equals volume. So if you play with a little more weight and a little more length, it's going to be perceived louder anyway.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So that's pretty cool. So can you tell us a little bit about your process? How do you compose? Where do you compose? What sort of things go into when you write a piece of music?
So I spend most of my composing time. I have a studio at home, you know, set up with all my equipment and, you know, synthesizers and keyboards and my computers and more monitors than I care to admit. I have always sort of referred to myself, I'm kind of a binge writer in that, you know, I may not write anything for several weeks, but then I may sit down over a weekend and I may write for 3 or 4 days straight. Right. I've always found that, you know, the hardest thing for me, and I know talking to other composers that they share similar feelings, the hardest thing for me is always getting started. And yep. Something that always frustrated me creatively was when I had a great idea about how to start something, but I wasn't really sure what happens next. And so I tend to let ideas, you know, float around in my head for a little while until I have a pretty good idea sketched out in my head about how a piece is really going to flow from beginning to end. And I may not know all of the content, you know, right at the point where I sit down to start writing. But if I have a pretty good roadmap, I find that I write a lot more creatively, and I find that I work my way through a piece to much better result than if I just sit down and kind of struggle through it.
Right. Yeah, that's different than some folks. I mean, some folks just say they sit down and it's the time to write and they do it, which I find to be challenging as well.
Yeah, I have some friends that's their approach to it, and it works for them and they get great results. But yeah, I really find that I have to be in just the right mood. It has to be just the right idea. And I also find that I get a lot of inspiration while I'm doing mundane things like mowing the yard and you know, things that take a lot of repetition and not a lot of mental energy. I'll be in the middle of something like that, you know, organizing DVDs or whatever, and I'll come up with a great idea just because I think my mind has an opportunity. My mind has a little bit of an opportunity to slow down and kind of work through some things. And so I've always found that kind of fascinating about some of my work.
So you mentioned a little bit about sometimes you get a piece going, then you're not quite sure where to go next. You know, we've all been around the block with writer's block, even maybe the students that are listening, you know, when they're trying to write a paper or whatever. How do you overcome that sort of thing?
Well, it's going to sound ridiculous, but I'll tell you, I play a lot of video games, quite honestly. Yeah. And a variety of things, and my video game tastes have changed since my children were born. I tend to play less shoot 'em up games now than I used to. I tend to play more sports games these days. But kind of
the students listening are gonna like you better now.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, there's nothing, you know, when I'm in a bad place with a piece and I just don't know what's happening, there's nothing better than getting on the PlayStation and you know, playing an hour of Battlefront and, you know, crashing spaceships and getting killed a few times and you know, and then I think it kind of purges your system of some of your frustration, and then I think you can sit down and you can approach the work, you know, once again, with kind of a clearer mind and a little bit more relaxed mind. But I also think that that's really healthy for the creative process too, is to give your own self space and time to kind of refresh yourself and stay refreshed and get your creativity kind of rebooted from time to time.
Right. So basically what you're saying is when a student has trouble finishing that term paper, that if they go play video games and their mom and dad yells at them, you say, well, I'm trying to recharge my creative juices.
I don't have any data to back that up, but I find that it works for me at least.
Well, the students listening will certainly enjoy hearing you say that. So any other issues you'd like to tell us that would have the students learn more about you and your music? Would be glad to share here. We'd love to hear that.
You know, if you're interested in hearing some more of my electroacoustic stuff, you can find me on the internet. My website is suburbanzombiemusic.com. You can find me there, and there's all kinds of stuff there. I'm also very active in the marching band community, do a lot of marching band arranging and drill design. So chances are, you know, if you've been out there in the world, you've run across my work at some point. And I think the other thing that I would say to students and conductors, and something that I try to do myself is really remain active in searching for and discovering new composers and new works and, you know, new musical, you know, activities and vehicles that bring you joy and that you find interest in. And I say that because I spent a long time kind of as a frustrated composer before I was sort of introduced to the electroacoustic world, which is something that really resonated with me. And I just thought, you know, if I had stumbled on that earlier in my life and in my career, you know, what different projects and things would I have done when I was a little bit younger? I'm really glad to be into them now. But, you know, that's just something that happened onto my life one day and really changed my creative process and the way that I learn. So, you know, continue to be discovering new things because you'll discover something that really resonates with you.
Right. So you mentioned your website, suburbanzombie.com. Is there other avenues? Are you on social media and things like that?
You can find me on Facebook. I'm Jason K. Niche on Facebook, because there actually are other Jason Niches in the world, which I was surprised to learn. And you can find me on Twitter at Jason Niche. And then the website, suburbanzombiemusic.com. You can always find me there. And I try to stay as active on all of those elements as I possibly can.
And we certainly will have links to all of those things on the Excelsior Music website. So you can reach out to Jason and find more about his music. And if you're interested in possibly commissioning the right of work and learning more about what's going on in his compositional career. Jason, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Hey, I appreciate it. I'm really excited about everything going on and really excited for the catalog to be out. And I'm humbled and honored to be a small part of it.
Well, we appreciate your talents and we are excited to have you as part of the catalog and all of the things that we have going on here at Excelsi Music. So that's enough for today for another episode of From the Composer. And again, this was Jason Nitsch, and I know you're going to hear more of his music here in the future. This is Larry Clark from Excelsi Music Publishing. Thank you for listening.